things that we see constantly throughout both the old world and the new world. And those, to me, are the symbols, and that's what I'd like to get across to you, I guess, as much as anything, is to see that these symbols are all out there. And we just have to look for them, but we may still have to be careful about the interpretation. But we have to, and that's what I said here, you know, that we know ourselves, but not for others. We can misconstrue and pass on misconceptions so we can trust the interpretation. So can we trust the interpretation of others? If you've been married, you know that when husband and wife talk, oftentimes they say, "That's not what you said." "Yes, it is." "No, that's not what you said." "Well, that's what I meant." You know, there's a communication gap between all of us. So if husband and wife, as close as they are, have that, think about our brothers and sisters that we don't spend every day with. But can we trust their interpretations? Maybe. Nothing can be learned without inspiration. It has to be something holy. In teaching, both the teacher and the learner must be on the same wavelength, and both then reach the understanding, and both are edified. And I think that's important for all of us, is that when someone brings something, or if we think we have something to bring, make sure that the learner understands the same thing that you understand. I know that sounds simple. Okay, so now we have source and target. And I'm trying to do this way, if you don't mind. Maybe I can have Levi help me set up the remote, and I can actually do that remotely. I'll probably mess it up, but I might do that so tomorrow I can go even faster. That's my objective, is to go fast enough, because I don't think spending forever and ever on this is the goal. I'm just trying to lay the background. It's kind of like mathematical facts. If you want to know how to figure out fractions, what's the first thing you have to learn? What a fraction is, and the amounts. And so that's all I'm trying to do at this point. We've got source and target. Know the history. All the statements surrounding it is important. Oftentimes our question of human relations rose in the church in the early days. And Joseph the Martyr went to the Lord. How many scriptures and doctrine covenants do we see where he took it to the Lord? And then the answer came. So there are patterns and signs. The past can be expected to be repeated. You've heard this one. Those who don't understand history are condemned to repeat it. It's going to happen again. If we don't figure out what we're doing wrong, we'll do it again. And don't we do that? Oftentimes. I bought many cars that way when I was young. Turned the radio on, bought the car. We have a young man in our congregation who does the same thing. Gets in it. It's available. I want it. He can buy a car in 5 minutes. And you buy another one 5 minutes later. Only there's no money. Well, anyway, I like this statement. Prophecy is history in reverse. It already was. And will be. And the same today, yesterday, and tomorrow. And then Doctrine and Covenants 52 tells us, again, I'll give you a pattern in all things. So we know there are patterns. And he that seeketh signs shall see signs, but not in salvation. And there, to me, as part of the concern we have to have is, you know, the Lord says for us to look for the signs. But you don't depend on that. And don't pretend that that's your salvation. You may have a wonderful spiritual experience. If you don't do anything about it, the value is lost. We haven't obeyed what the Lord asked us to do. Instead of the thorn shall come up the fir tree, and instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle, and shall be the Lord for a name and for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off. The Lord does give us signs and images and prophecy that we might know and learn. So we have to get it from the source. And then when we get it, we utilize that revelation for what purpose? What's our ultimate goal? Especially for us who are a little old. We're going to die. We're going back to the source. where we came from is where we're going to. It's a circle. That's the goal. We want to live with the Father again. We got separated in the garden, or out of the garden. And so our goal is to get back there. So the source is also always the target. And in light, all enlightenment comes from the light that shines and shows the way. And I like this one, the Alma. Behold, it has been made to me by an angel that the spirits of men, as soon as they have departed from this mortal body, whether they be good or evil, are taken home to the God who gave them life. We've read that many, many times, haven't we? And yet, that's exactly it, is that we are going back home. And that's just the initial going back home. But what a beautiful plan. Jim, did you have...
Yeah, this is a wonderful, wonderful Catholic scripture. I think it's important that we identify who God is there, but that it's not Father, it's Jesus Christ. Nobody ascends to the Father. And Jesus tells us that in the third chapter of John, where he says... this is the experience, remember, with Nicodemus, and this chapter,
yes.
The Baptist, the first part of the fourth chapter. And after he gets done chastising Nicodemus for not knowing these things, because he's a master of Israel, he says, if I told you earthly things, and you believe not, how should you believe if I tell you heavenly things? I tell you, no man hath ascended up to heaven but he who came down from heaven, the Son of Man, and so Al's statement is in harmony with Ecclesiastes that when we die, we go back to the God who gave us life, the Creator, Jesus, under the authority of the Father, that is Jesus. And that's why in the millennial reign, the Father's not present in that experience. And I can only draw one conclusion from that, and so this is speculation, that it will take 1,000 years of living with Christ to prepare ourselves to enter the presence of the holiness of the Father. So the God that is speaking up there is really Jesus Christ. Who is God, but He has a Father.
Thank you. I agree. I hope my wife's got that so I can put that in.
What was the verse again?
It's John.
John 3:13.
Yeah, it's in the... It's in John, and write down Nicodemus. That will give us a clue. And of course, in John 5:19, it says the Son doeth nothing without the Father. Also, the Ecclesiastes verse says there's nothing new under the sun. Everything comes from the source. Now we have things like fiction and fairy tales. All stories, tales, fiction, stem from some other source that's usually more ancient. But all types testify of the source itself. And I've written some scriptures down. If you want to write those down, I didn't get a chance to go to all of those scriptures, but I wanted them in this as I developed it so that I could go back to it. And oh yes, I need to look that one up and see if we want to include it or not. But the important thing is that we've all seen and read of those representations of things which are either pictures that tell some story, and maybe there's a legend, there's a myth, and it tells a beautiful story about something. It's an Indian legend. It's a Native American legend from Central or South America. It's one from the old world. But all of them are based back in some source of truth. How many of you have heard of the saga of Gilgamesh? You've heard of Gilgamesh, and then that was out of Mesopotamia. And many scholars, biblical scholars, the Hebrews borrowed that. You know, they just got that story from those other cultures. And they talk about Zoroaster, who was a Persian deity and born of a virgin. That's where we got the idea of the born of a virgin. It's all borrowed. Well, I think most of us believe the other way, that the original scriptures, which were taught in the beginning, encompassed all of those things, and the other cultures borrowed from them. And I have another statement on that. Well, this isn't real complete, so I'm going to go on, because once again, I don't want to spend too much time in it, but I hope it'll give us some basis. So we have a word like chet, it means sin. It's an old archery term in Hebrew. It means to miss the mark. And the mark is to have the correct communication that points back to the source. So we're always still looking for that. And I know we do this. You're doing it in class with us now. We're looking for that perfect way. Just as Brother Jim gave us a more perfect explanation of going back to God means actually going back to Christ. And he has scriptural basis for doing so. He has prophetic insight to do that. Everything comes from God. From God is light, King Solomon said. Daniel said he had all understanding. I like the one in Matthew, the 16th chapter, that where Christ tells Peter, you know, not flesh and blood hath revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. You know, when he said that you are Christ, the Son of God. And, you know, it takes more than just some kind of physical knowledge to know that something is true. It has to be confirmed by that Spirit. But it all comes from God and goes back to God.
Some of you have the question mark here with Luke reference.
Because I did get it looked up. And I don't remember. I think actually I did look at it quickly and I didn't get an understanding, and so I said it. And once again I apologize, and I'm trying to put something together, and if someone wants to look that up, then perhaps we can add that in and I'll know what that reference is. But it has to do once again with that our target and our source are going to be the same thing. What we get from, we go back to. With people of some age in this class, we could talk about that, you know, but we don't want to. But as we are babes, there are certain physical characteristics we have. And as we age, those physical characteristics come back. I don't have any hair on my legs anymore, you know. I won't talk about the other things, but it's very true, you know. And so there is a cycle of life. Yeah, they go ahead.
And said unto them, thus it is written, and thus it behooveth Christ to suffer and to rise from the dead the third day.
Maybe that's why I was confused.
Yeah,
I don't see it either. I've got a lot of work to do, but I appreciate it.
Well, if you're looking at going back to the source, Christ showed us the source.
Yeah.
He died and went back.
Right. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. He showed us that this is a representation of the source from which you came and to which you will return. Well, I'm not going to spend too much on this time, but the target, and there are scriptures that talk about what the target should be, and once again, notice this author uses Philip. This is a recently discovered book, probably about, I don't know, about 10 years ago or so. It's the Book of Philip, and a lot of people say, well, that's one of the, you know, scriptures that didn't get in the canon of scripture. So there's some good things in there, and there could be. Might have to put it in that classification of the Apocrypha. But there are scriptures there that talk about where we do. The main important point for me is confidence in the flesh is off target. The moment that we think that we've got the answer, that our intellect is going to save us, then we're off the target. We're that's check, that's sin. We miss the target. Yes.
That's one thing. I think it's section 9. So to study that in your mind, then if it be right, don't call that your limits are in you.
If right.
It comes into a super thought, how to get the thing that's wrong.
Yes. And so as we study it out, then if we don't have that confirmation, we have to put a question mark on Dave's screen here. Certainly for self-attention. That's a very human factor for all of us. But if anything we do is for self-attention, there's no truth in it. If it all points to me, if I tell you, and we kind of did that a little bit playing yesterday, and I hope you understand that. You all clapped for Eric, and you didn't clap for me, you know. But we all realize, don't we, that that's not the point. It's not what any of us does here. I've been very fortunate to, and I said this the other day, I think, to share with people like Ray Treves and Wayne Simmons and Henry Schaefer. I remember Henry Schaefer came to our house and came to our congregation. He stayed in our house, and when he came in, he saw lots of bottles of soda pop. And he said, "I got here just in time to save you." And he was a good man. But Henry Schaefer was a man. And they were all men. And they have their own human flaws, just like we do. And so we don't honor them. We honor the God that gave them the spirit that he gave them, that they could share that with us. And those people did. And I respect them for that and their memory for that. But I don't honor them in that sense. I don't honor them. I honor God for what he did in their lives. So even in John, it said there's no honor from man for Jesus. Jesus doesn't want honor. He wants us to be directed by the Spirit of the Father. Okay, not sure how deep this went.
The Apostle Paul said it's not good to mention themselves. The Apostle Paul said it's not good that men should compare themselves to men.
Compare themselves to men, yes. Because every one of you has a special and different gift. And you have to give that gift back for the graciousness of life that we've been given. But we don't need to compare ourselves to somebody else. But we have a tendency to do so. And John says salvation is of the Jews. So remember, we're still on the target. We're still headed towards salvation. Jesus was a Jew. And that's why it was said that way. The oracles are committed to them, meaning the Jews. The Father gave his chosen people a treasure. He gave them something that they were to do. And of course we feel like they did not do that, but he did choose them to do that. And that covenant is still open to them. Okay, so source of biblical scriptures, where did they come from? There's a book of remembrance. Jim and I had a discussion yesterday whether that was in Hebrew or was it a different language. I think you made a very good case for that it was an original language or the original language, and that it might not have been Hebrew. I know my son and daughter-in-law feel that it was written in Hebrew. But those are the kinds of things we need to discuss. I really enjoyed the 70s reunion for the class they had for the adults with David...
Whiting.
I always will say David, and I got Newman, and I can't get the last name. But he really made us think. We had opinions, and the questions were pretty deep and well stated and well discussed. And we still did not come to any great consensus of opinion, but at least we had discussed the concept. And when someone else comes to you and says, "Well, what do you think about this?" You say, "Well, I have some ideas because." And then I got the scriptures I can go to show why I have that feeling. So, in the Old Testament, we have the Pentateuch, and of course, from Moses, probably written in Egyptian. There's my note. We have probably writings and scriptures and things that actually come out of all of these other cultures. They were all affected by the different civilizations in Cana and Assyria and Persia. And the brass plates, I'm like Brother Jim, I believe those were very ancient scriptures. And they were written in Egyptian. We have the same circumstances in the New World. You have cultures, if you look at the Olmec, the Maya, and the Toltec and the Aztec cultures, you see all these similarities, a thread running through them where they borrowed from one another, they learned from one another, they adapted from one another, and you see some of the same symbols. You have Quetzalcoatl represented with different animals, but still there. You have, I guess you have Kukulkan. You have the different deities in different shapes and forms, but it's from the same thread. Well, it's supposed to be none of these came from nothing. Everything had a source. I like the song, you may remember it, you know, from Julie Andrews from Sound of Music. Nothing came from nothing, nothing ever could. So somewhere in my youth and childhood, I must have done something good. You know, things worked out well. Well, I think there is truth in that, there had to be some creative force in the beginning. It came from that. Many languages feel, and that was discussed yesterday, and I forget now who said that about language, that you felt that languages were full-blown. There's a lot of evidence that languages do develop, but that somehow there was still some full-blown language that, boom, came in. Yes?
Well, at the time of the Tower of Babel, when languages were confused, they had to become all one. Now, there were probably other languages from there that developed or evolved.
Yeah. Did you all hear that? From the Tower of Babel, he was saying that those languages that came out of that, where they were confounded and confused, that they had to be full-blown for them to be able to communicate. So, certainly the theory of the caveman grunting over this as a rock and finding that, that word after grunting for, you know, years and finally identifying that grunt meant rock, you know, we think that there was more to it than that. Egypt's history has been preserved, and so there are a lot of proofs there of the collusion between different cultures. Israel borrowed from Egypt. They borrowed food from Egypt in one time, but they borrowed a lot of culture from Egypt. It's amazing how many people, I mean, Joseph and Mary ran to Egypt. Joseph ran to Egypt. Everybody, you know, there was tremendous connection between them. But where did the Egyptians get it? I think they borrowed from the ancient Jews. That they got from the forefathers of them. And in the final analysis, all came from Noah. Ham to Egypt. Shem to the Semites, or Eber, Hebrew, which means to cross. And then there's Japheth. And I've got a question on that, because I'm not sure. I always thought of Japheth as being a father to the Assyrians, and maybe the Huns, and maybe the Chinese. I don't know. Any thoughts? We don't have that answer yet. Of course, Noah descended from Adam and Adam from God.
Well, I think maybe a more general statement would help that Jacob is the father of the Gentiles.
Okay.
So that would include those groups and others.
In the general term of Gentile, I presume, not color of skin.
Well, Shem, yep. Semitic.
Yeah. I'm sorry, about what?
Yeah, about language.
Language?
Language. Mm-hmm. Certainly languages do develop, but I don't think language started out as a grunt and got to be a language. And I think the inspired version helps us with that. And I think that probably the people that believe that the grunting process eventually became dying are the same. same people that believe that we all started out as a single cell amoeba and then became something. But if you believe that God actually created man, now it happened as God says it does, then in Genesis 2, you can believe this, and they were also, verse 26 and 7, they were also living souls, right? God breathed in them the breath of life and commanded that whatsoever Adam called every living creature that should be the name thereof. And Adam gave names to all the cattle, to the fowls of the air, and every beast of the field. But after Adam, there was not found healthy. What's interesting is in Brother Oakland's experience, where he said that he witnessed the dawn of creation, he saw that event. And he saw that that's how God formed human language, by bringing the animals before Adam, and Adam named them by the power of the Holy Spirit, and that formed human language instantly.
I thank you for that, because yes, that is, I was trained before I joined the church in linguistics, and in that, that's the kind of learning that we got, that it was a procedural grunt method from the cavemen, and there are movies and things that they do on that. And so we get that impression, and the rest of the world has that impression. And I think that's why this discussion is good. Rita.
Well, this may not be an important question, but is that the Japin that there's been this big craze about praying his prayer?
It's Jacob.
Is that the same guy?
I have not heard of that. Has anyone?
Okay. Well, he was someone from the Old Testament that prayed a prayer and has gone around the internet. And, oh, you should pray his prayer because he was a righteous man. And I don't know. It always kind of bothers me because I think we should follow Christ's example, not.
Yes.
Okay. So, excuse me. That's wrong.
That's okay. It's still important for us to know that, because there's so much on the internet like that. Someone gets something started and it becomes gospel, and there's no background for it. And that's why we need to be a scripturally based people. Show me the scripture, that says that. We'll start there.
I think something else too, Dave. I think there's a possibility, I'll phrase it that way, that Chinese and some of those in that part of Asia could be descendants of the Jaredites.
That was my feeling, that most of those, or many of those, were from the Jaredites. How many of you have seen read a book called the, I want to say the Chinese Bible, that's not the title of it. We call it, do you remember what it is, Sandy? Yeah, we call it the Chinese Bible, but that's not the title of the book. Written probably 20, 25 years ago at least. But it's a very interesting thing, and that would be a great thing to do for a class sometime. A missionary went into China and started looking at the Chinese language and started dividing it out. And when he did, I know I need to include this here, because this is about the symbols. But when you break down the different symbols they use in the ancient Chinese writing and divide it into the different parts, it tells the story. And for example, there's a little leg here that says man walking, and you add in this other part about garden, and I forget, there was one other thing, maybe breathing dust, or breathing air into them, and that equals the word happiness. Okay, it tells the story of the garden. And so what is it? Oh, it's a discovery of Genesis. That's what
it is. Two books,
which are small books. There's a the second one, too. Well, I haven't seen the second one, so I need to look into that one. But very interesting. Now, it gets very complicated toward the end part of it, where, and I think this book does somewhat the same thing. It gets down to the point of identifying that the bead that Russell is wearing today means, and I establish a real interpretation of that. Well, Russell says, no, I just put it on, it may not have that great significance. So we have to be careful about the interpretation, and that's hopefully the tools that we'll all gain as we look at it. But there are symbols, and I appreciate all that. I highly recommend that book. It's an enlightening thing, and it shows, I think, a real strong, strong possibility that the Jaredites were the ones that took the gospel to them, and the story of Genesis, and that's why they knew it. Okay, and it's in their language, and it's in those symbols. I should have included it. Thank you. Well, this part is about comparing. And so on the left-hand side, we see a drawing that comes out of, I can't remember. Out of the Saracens from the Middle East. And of course, the one on the right is from the New World with the Quetzalcoatl-type dragon and swallowing the person. Now, and notice that on the left-hand side, there's a cross with it. I believe that is the symbol for the company that produces the Alfa Romeo. This one's, it is. And so, no, some people say it, that's what it is. But look at the comparison between the New World and the Old World. Those comparisons are there. So we can look at them, have to look at them carefully, but and there are all kinds of symbols in it. The tail feathers on the serpent on the right actually refer to prophetic insight. So, you know, as they begin to decipher more and more some of these symbols, we see the value in those, I hope.
Why are they swallowing the
first? I don't know. Maybe that's we're going back to God. I don't know. And, you know, like we said yesterday, remember the serpent elevated upon the staff of Moses. You know, we think, I said something like that in a class down in Cross Timbers, and I was just about nailed to the cross myself for suggesting that God was a snake. Well, I didn't say he was, but there was a symbol raised up for that. Look on that. Or I guess it was Jesus Christ. That Jesus Christ was. But the staff was more like a cross. And so there is symbolic representation. And another thought that goes along with that, I don't know how many of you discussed this previously, but what does the devil use to fool us? Some of the good things. Something that looks like it's good. Okay? So there's a snake that flies, but there's one that's condemned to crawl on his belly. And there's the comparison. So, I have to admit, I'd be scared to death if I died and I saw a big giant snake that said he was God. I would be, you know, probably mortified at that point. I don't know. I guess it would already be that way. But, you know, the thing is, We don't want to tie too much specific, oh, that's, you know, represented. These are the signs. This is the prophetic insight that people use to describe what they felt and what they felt that they knew. Somebody watch me on my time because...
Hey, I also thought it was interesting that in the picture on the right, it felt like a whole world person was being swallowed.
Oh, yes. Well, but those were from two different worlds. And the important thing is to see that there are similarities between them and that there is meaning to all of those cultures. That there are connections and we want to be able to see those connections. And I'm not sure there... Some scholars would probably look at that and say the reason for that swallowing is that's indicating the sacrifices that they made to Quetzalcoatl. Well, those were not done in the older civilizations. In the Olmec civilization, that human sacrifice was not done. It was only done in the later civilizations, the later Maya, the later Toltec, and of course then the Aztec. That's what most people understand of the Aztec civilization, and they think that represents all of Latin American ancient civilizations. And of course, they do not. They are... Okay, first, Glenn, yes.
What was the difference in maybe be going in head first or going in feet first?
That's the interpretive process that we don't understand. Many archaeologists and scholars look at that and say, oh, this means this and this means this, but that's mostly man's knowledge. So all we're doing is saying there is a connection. We see the two worlds, old and new, and that God was working in both. We don't know all the specifics, and we have to be careful about making too many specifics. It's like, you know, Russell's bead. I get, you know, why did he tie his shoelace left-hand side instead of right? You know, is there a significance? I don't know.
You know, can I have some lines?
Okay, what's it?
So when I'm going in, the first is they're wanting to go. Okay. And first they're being forced to go.
That's possible. But that is speculation. So what we do is we read the scriptures and see if there's any basis for some of that. And then we have to look a lot further. She was first and then Judy. Yes. And yet for most of us, we, and within the church, we believe that the representation of Quetzalcoatl, the serpent, the plume serpent, the flying serpent, represents Jesus Christ. Because it's a representation later on of other people who lost the true meaning. They lost the meaning of why it was done, how it was done, and they lost that prophetic insight, and so they represented it the best way they can. So what we have is a real aberration of the... Remember we talked about myths? They have a basis in the source, but they've been skewed to the wrong side. And so we can get confused. And so what we're saying is it shows and hints towards something, but we have to be careful to interpret that that's what it means. Even if it's down to head, going in head first or feet first. You know, without some scripture, I wouldn't want to say.
Well, in the scripture, now, it doesn't talk about him, but when a king conquered another nation and king, he put his foot on his neck. And most of the time, they were beheaded. All of the people in that family were beheaded or killed somehow because they did not want that lineage to go on and come back and fight him out.
True.
So that could represent getting rid of the head first.
That's very possible. You know, we don't know. That's certainly something to be thought about. But until we have further knowledge, then we can't state that. That's all I'm saying. But we must investigate, yes.
What if the whole world is something so simple as the fact that if you've ever seen pictures of bull constrictors that devour their prey, most of the time that I've seen it anyway, they take the head first for some reason.
Yeah.
Maybe because of too many pinnacles of arms and legs and things, so they go from the top. Maybe that's a simple thing that is not
right.
Symbolic, but it's just the way a serpent would devour.
Yeah. It's the great mystery of Russell's shoelace. Yeah. And that's all I'm saying. We need to use care with that we don't put too much into it. We want to be able to look at it. I think we should. I think there are signs that we need to look towards. And in the last 2 days of this class, I'll show you some other signs that I think are in the sky. But we have to be careful that we don't attach so much knowledge that we think we have about it that we've been. I can prove to you by Friday that this world as you know it will end in 2017. And I don't know that. Understand? I can prove it. And I don't know it. I can put all the facts out, lay them out, and prove my case. And I don't know. And that's great. Yeah, what time do I need to stop? I've done. Do I need to stop in about 5 minutes? Is that me right?
At the most.
Okay, at the most, I've been told. You see the little, I want to say etchings, but they're like lintels, they're carvings. And do you know who that represents down there in the bottom? Yeah, somebody went over, he was thrown over the boat because the boat was going to get capsized if they didn't throw it. Who?
It's like Jonah.
It's Jonah. But what's swallowing him? You see a whale? I don't see a whale. It's a serpent. And some of the translations actually, the older translations actually refer to a monster. It was a sea monster. And so in the Middle Ages, they all knew that kind of thing. Now in modern times, our people don't know that. We're literate. We read, but we read that one Bible that says, Jonah swallowed by a whale, boom, boom, story ends. Well, that wasn't the way it always was. And there are plenty of evidences that many people in ancient times believed that the story of Jonah and that story of Jonah, that it was a sea monster, like a serpent, a snake, something like that, that swallowed him. So those are interesting things to look at. It doesn't close the case, but you know, there could be. We'll find out more. Well, I think these are just my notes for that particular thing. In Genesis, it refers in the third chapter of the fork-tongued serpent in the garden. And then there's a Borgia plate on the two arms of the serpent. Oh, this one right here. This is from the New World. Look at that. It's an interesting pictograph, painting, from the Borgia Codex. And you see that there's somebody coming out with two hands. And they spoke with their hands. Hands oftentimes mean speaking symbols. And so, you know, here it comes out that way, with a forked tongue. Once we compare things and see, well, that looks like this and like this, and then we have to see if there's a connection. And whether we make that connection or not, I think I'll make one of these the last slides, but it depends on our intellect. We all have a different kind of intellect. And there you are. You've heard of right brain, left brain. Well, I don't have all the information. I'll try to, what I can do is I can make a copy of this and show it to you. The author does a pretty good job of looking at yin and yang. In other words, you know, the male side, the female side, we know there's a difference. We guys do for sure. We know there's a difference in the thinking patterns. But that's okay because God made it that way. And when we join together, then we're all right. Like my bumper sticker years ago said, a man is not complete until he's married and then he's finished. But, you know, until that time, then we're not complete. We need both the yin and the yang. And so the left side is the intellectual side. The right side is the spiritual side. And all those things are kind of listed on there. And I'm trying to get that to you as a copy so you can look at it. It's interesting. And it shows us that how we make the connections are going to depend on what brain we're thinking with. Now, how are we going to get the most true evaluation of what we're seeing and evaluating? Spiritual side? So you leave the intellectual out? Yeah, just leave the intellectual out. God just gave that as an afterthought. Well, it's the same. Yeah. You use both sides, don't you? God created the covenant relationship to join the parts together to make the perfection. And the same thing with when we look at these, when you look at the Borgia Codex that you just saw, you got to use two things. You got to use the intellect, and then you have to ask the Lord, Lord, does that really mean, is that representative of that? And the more you study and the more you learn, some of those things come true. But you don't know that until you're 73 years old. Okay. Thank you, dear. Thank you, everybody. Sorry for the confusion. But this was still better than yesterday, right? To have the pictures like this. Okay. comes out of it, it is because God said, go do this. And that really is important, because if there are no students, there's no teacher. You don't need one. And I've had many teachers in my life, and I appreciated every one of them that gave me something. And then all you do is pass it on. When you
have children, what do? You just pass on your life to them. That's your whole goal. And you don't need applause from them. You just need them to do what you ask them to do. Okay, now it's into a sermon, so thank you.
Tomorrow we need to pray for the projector bulb. I took it out of the air conditioning and put it out and set it up. It was all fogged up from coming out here. And I realized, I knew that. I should have brought it out earlier to tackle me. But I've used this for quite some time, and I don't know how long the bulb's going to last. But if it goes, I have one on order. It's supposed to come to Neil's house, and I don't know. That's Friday. So if it goes out, it's $150 for bulb. And I just pray it doesn't go out, so I can show you the rest. Are more important than this that I've shown.
Where you want it at. Okay. And the microphone. Is this yours?
No, that's recording.
We
hit stop.
We're stopped.